Welcome to the Make Lemonade Podcast, formerly known as the Niche Website Builders Podcast. But today we have Nina Clapperton. If you are active on Twitter or SEO Twitter, you'll probably have come across Nina sharing a lot of different tips and tricks on there. But she's a travel blogger, currently making 30K on 165,000 page views per month, growing rapidly all within travel. She shares everything she's doing pretty much in that space around travel, how she's her content strategy, keyword research strategy, covering how she is soloing her content, plans going forward, how she's using AI tools, right? She shares pretty much everything to her success and gives some tips for you to be able to reach these income levels and do well, especially within travel and within other niches. So if you are in travel, this will be a treat for you. If you're not, there's still a lot to take away for you regarding the affiliate side of monetization. So sit back and enjoy.
Are you ready to get serious about building a profitable brand online? Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. We bring you the latest field-tested tips, tricks, and strategies for building a profitable online business. We interview industry experts, share customer success stories, and reveal our own experiences working on hundreds of sites to inspire and motivate you to make something happen. This podcast is brought to you by Make Lemonade. Whether you've launched your business yesterday or you're already a market leader, Make Lemonade will help you rule your world. Head over to makelemonade.agency/show for the latest offers on our services. Let's do this.
Welcome to the Niche Website Builders Podcast. Well, now the Make Lemonade Podcast since the rebrand. So if anyone's wondering why it is no longer called the Niche Website Builders Podcast, it's because it's Make Lemonade. But we welcome Nina Clapperton. Welcome, Nina.
Hi, thanks so much for having me, James.
No, thanks for coming on. I guess you're pretty prolific on SEO Twitter at the moment, posting a lot of different things on there. I think you're doing that 100K challenge thing too, right?
Yeah, which
that leaderboard.
I just signed up on a whim, and then I was like fourth place the first month, and I was like, this is with my second site too. So I was like, what's happening?
Oh, okay. So you're crushing your... Okay, we're going to dive into a lot of that. But let's start with a little bit of your background. How did you get into what you're doing?
Basically, I was that kid that didn't go outside. So I like built websites for all my dogs and wrote like really terrible fan fiction about my dogs' lives. And then over the course of the rest of my life, I was just like, I don't know what I want to do with myself. So I was supposed to go to law school and instead found a $200 flight to New Zealand and went there. And then when I was there...
Oh, my home.
Yeah, oh, awesome. New Zealand's my favorite place ever. Like, it's where my heart belongs and it's where I will end up once I figure out getting my dog there. But yeah, so I moved there for a year and just realized I needed something that like made my heart sing a lot more than law school ever would, and started the blog. Failed for 5 years spectacularly. Like, I think my highest month organically was like 5,000 page views. And I did all those really annoying Facebook comment swaps. Like, you go to my site and comment, I'll go to your site. Yeah. And I spent like 80 hours a week on that while I was working for the New Zealand government. So I was like, I'm not doing anything fun. This is ridiculous. So figured out I needed to learn SEO. And then, yeah, I started December of 2021 really in earnest. And then here I am now.
Awesome. All right. Let's start with your first website that you mentioned that's not part of this this leaderboard thing. So is that a travel blog, your main site?
Yes, it is. Yeah, so travel is like the first thing I ever did. And then with it, I think I made the mistake a lot of travel bloggers do of just like writing what was happening in front of me every random moment. So there was no real rhyme or reason. I didn't know who I was writing for. I definitely wasn't doing keywords. I was just like, hey, I went swimming with wild dolphins today. That was great. Or like, I wrote one post where I was in Singapore visiting my mom, and I literally said, I'm in Singapore visiting my mom. And like, it was a 500 word post. No one cared. Like, who wants to know that?
No, fair enough. Travel's an interesting one, because obviously the idea of travel is a huge, huge, huge niche. So if you kind of niche down into a certain aspect of travel. Yes. I mean, I'm assuming you could probably niche down to country, or you can niche down to the type of travel. There's a lot in there. So what are you currently, or are you able to share what you're currently doing?
Of course. Yeah. So my main site, I started off with solo female travel once I started kind of finding a niche. And then I realized solo female travel is so oversaturated, and not in a bad way. There's just like really good people out there. So it's really hard. Yes. Tons. Like the Blonde Abroad, there's just so many, honestly. I could name a million people doing it. And the problem is, like, they've existed since like 2010 and stuff like that. So their DA is like 50, 60, 70. And then here's me coming in with a DA 14 being like, I know everything. And I knew nothing. So because of that, I realized like, I'm just not able to crack it. And if I did solo female travel in a specific country, I probably could have, but I didn't want to limit myself like that. So I sat down and looked at my top 10 most trafficked posts, which, like, again, not that much traffic, but my top three were all about living abroad, because I've lived in now 18 countries in the last 10 or 11 years. And I realized people really wanted to know more about that. So I niched into expat travel and like living abroad in different places, not digital nomad, more like kind of a permanent move. Even though I call myself a slow mad, because I tend to do like 2 to 6 months in a country. New Zealand has been my longest by far in a while. And then I also added a pillar of Canada, because like I'm in Canada. At the time it was the pandemic, I was stuck here. I needed to write about some of the vaguely interesting things I was doing to not go out of my mind living in my sister's basement. So I was like, okay, we'll do living in Canada as kind of one of the main pillars. I thought I would write on it for like a month. It's been a year and a half and I'm still writing on it.
Wow. Wow. Okay. Let's start with maybe some of the stats of the site, and we'll go into some of the content strategy, which is quite interesting. Yeah. But I think it was based on your Twitter, I don't know if it's how accurate this is, but 20K you're making a month with 165,000 page views. Is that correct?
My lowest month this year was 20K in February, partially because I panicked after I hit 32,000 and, or no, 31.5, because there was a bit from another site in January. And I find whenever I have like a really high income month, I panic and I change things and then I break it. So
why do you change things if you have a high income
I don't month? Know. I think it's, so according to like my therapist, she's like, you self-sabotage. And I'm like, well, obviously, like, that's clear. So I think what happened was I tried to feel like, okay, I need to be super worthy to have this money. I need to be working like crazy, crazy hard. Cause like I was also working full time at a law firm until the end of January of 2023. Yeah, this year. So like I was doing all of this while at a law firm that I was not good at my job, I will be honest, because I was doing this a lot of the time. But while I was there, like I was doing this part time and it felt like I shouldn't be earning this money if I wasn't doing it full time and working 200 hours a week and everything. And like this month, so it's May right now, I hit, I have the number up, one sec. 30.5 roughly, just like a little bit over $1,000 this month. And I think I've logged into my site 3 times. Like, wow. Yeah. And then I have 165,000 page views. Which again, massive growth, and I wasn't really doing a lot, which is kind of nice.
Damn, that's a nice ratio of page views to revenue there. But how was that monetization split on your site? Is it mainly just affiliate within travel?
So for me, it's mostly affiliates. This is my highest ad revenue month I've had so far. So I'm just over $4,200 in ad revenue. That was initially from Mediavine. This week I actually switched to Raptive to give it a try. So a little bit with each of them, kind of oddly. And then mostly it is affiliates. I do my affiliates on site and in my email. So like when you asked what I broke in February, I stopped emailing people and started letting like ChatGPT write emails that I didn't edit and then didn't put affiliate links in. And it was like, okay, why did you do that? So yeah.
So you make a fair whack from the email list too there. But with, I think I'm thinking of switching to Raptive as well once I get to that 100K. I'm pretty close to it on one of my sites, just so I can have other sites on there at lower page views. I think Mediavine got rid of their one, right?
Yeah, with Mediavine now you have to have, like, you have to make $100,000 a year from them before they'll allow you to bring in other ones at 25,000 sessions. And then they also have, like, the different income split, like revenue share, than Raptiv. So it's just, I don't know. For me, I was like, I love trying things. I did, like, I broke one of my baby sites with Ezoic for 3 months, just giving it a shot. I'm doing tests with, like, Stay 22 for travel. I love doing experiments. I guess, like, I failed science really badly in high school, so I think I'm trying to, like, make up for it now, like, pretending I'm, like, a data scientist or something. But I find that, like, I wasn't finding enough online about Mediavine versus Raptiv, and I really wanted to figure out the difference. I feel like Ezoic versus Raptiv is more common. But Ezoic didn't work for me at the level, at that lower level, and I haven't tried it at the higher level.
Yeah, fair enough. And then within that same site, I think you went from what, 100k to 150k page views in 6 months?
6 weeks.
Like crazy. Six weeks?
Yeah, so I, yeah, I grew by...
How's that happen?
So it was 45k page views in 6 weeks, which is... and to be honest, I broke my tracking for 3 days in the first kind of previous month. So I've estimated a bit highly that it was probably 2K a day, which would bring it to the 45K page views. It might be a little bit less. So then it would be a bigger growth. That was during the period, like, I've been road tripping across the US and Canada for the last couple months. So I've not been doing as much as I probably, as much as, like, my internal hardworking clock says I should be doing, even though, like, I think I've deserved a vacation. And so for that site, really all I did was in January and February, I hired 40 writers to do a trial and then ended up picking the ones I wanted to go with. So I gave them a bunch of zero volume keywords, which, like, are not zero volume. Everyone always goes like, why do you bother with that? They are like my secret sauce. I call them like my zero to hero keywords. I love them. So I gave those to them because I'm like, even if it ends up being terrible, I can still judge it a little bit and it'll be publishable. It'll be fine. So I had, I think we've only uploaded 20 of them so far because I hired the writers before I hired a VA to upload the post, which was a mistake. That was the wrong way to do it. So we put up about 20 of those in January, February. And then just the last few weeks, all it was is I did a big EEAT audit. So I went through all of my posts and made sure that it was really clear who wrote them, who you should listen to, like why I am an authority on this, and then included personal experience throughout. And like I have... a very conversational brand. So I'm very much like, okay, I climbed this cliff and then all trails said to go down this way. And it turned out that was like literally a precipice. And then I had to carry my dog rock climbing down a precipice. Whoops. So don't do that. And so it's nice to like throw those bits in really easily. But I think for a while there, I was trying to sound like, I don't know, like Lonely Planet or something, which just isn't my vibe. And so I was leaving out a lot of the personality. So I added that in. I added author boxes, cleaned up some of my internal linking because like one of my biggest posts, every single iteration of like, I think it had 50 back or 50 internal links and like 30 or 40 of them were the exact same anchor text every single time. And at a certain point that gets a bit spammy to Google. Google's like, okay, I see what you're doing. Calm down, go away. So I went through and just varied up a bunch of that. And yeah, and then it was also, I definitely think removing, there was like a little bit of script left from grow.me via Mediavine that I had like lurking in the background and like knocking that off really helped because for months I was stuck at 90,000 page views with grow.me on my site and like Mediavine kept being like, it's fine, you're doing well. I'm like, I'm not though. Published like 40 posts and nothing's happening. Like what's going on? So got rid of that. And I think the getting rid of those little extra traces also helped.
Nice. I think that personal anecdote stuff is underutilized big time, especially with AI, right?
Oh, 100%.
With AI, right? It's like being able to say like what you mentioned there. I did this. This is what happened, you know?
Yeah.
I made this mistake, whatever it is. And then being able to portray that, hey, I've actually been there.
I find that even like now, like I'm road tripping a lot, so I keep researching places I've never been. And the amount of times, like the intro tells me nothing. And I think the intro is really important and a lot of people really skip it. But I used to write novels. I used to like, I did academic writing too. The intro has always been so important and so many people hate it, but it really does help people get an understanding of what's happening. So if you don't tell me in the intro that you've done the thing and why I should listen to you, I'm gone usually. And then same for like having original photos in it. Like, I'm not a good photographer. Half of my photos are slanted because I have a tripod that like my sister's dog knocked off a cliff once. And so, and I've just never, it's like a $20 tripod. I've never replaced it. But so the whole thing is pretty wonky and I don't spend the time fixing or editing photos really. So yeah, a lot of my photos, you can see the horizon like should be this. And then it's like, oh, okay. It's fully perpendicular, whatever. But yeah, I added those in. I definitely think adding some videos helped too, like, and not even necessarily my videos, because on my main site, I don't like have a YouTube presence for it or anything, but embedding some of my TikToks of my dog, which again, I don't do seriously, I just think he's really cute, so I do a couple of him wandering places, and then other people's YouTube videos as well. I definitely think Google is prioritizing stuff like that now.
So how are you writing those intros then to show why they should be listening to you?
So I use Jamie IF's Spear framework for intros from Twitter. And I found that like the best way to do it is just kind of start with like reiterating the keyword. So are you looking for whatever? Are you wondering whatever the keyword is? It's very formulaic, but like it works. So who cares? So like, are you wondering whatever? And then I like basically tell them I've got you covered, but don't say it that way. Like say it like, okay, like an example, I guess, would be like, okay, if it's hiking boots, like, are you looking for the best hiking boots for high arches? That doesn't exist. Someone please write that post, because I've been looking for good high arch hiking boots for forever. But in there, like you would say, I've got massively high arches. I have like had all of the foot pain from all of these boots before. So I trialed 20 of them to see what's going to work. And then you can add in the expertise. So like that's the I've done the thing. Now you want the why am I qualified to tell you about the thing, which is like, I've hiked 100 million miles. I don't know. Like I have climbed Everest. I've done whatever. Something that just says like, this is why you should listen to me. And for travel, a lot of it is just, I did the thing. But I think what people get confused about is like the I'm qualified versus I've done the thing are a little bit different. So for example, if someone was a doctor, you could be a heart surgeon. But if you're talking about like, I don't know, a boob job or something, like you're not qualified for that. So yes, while you're a doctor, are you the right kind of doctor? And just saying, I'm an expert traveler. Like I can't talk about child travel. I'm terrified of kids. Like they genuinely scare me. So like I've never been around them. And because of that, I'm not going to write about like, oh yeah, I have a whole family travel blog because I know what to do. I don't. Like I would be like, okay, put them in a crate like a puppy maybe. And then I'd get arrested because that's not allowed.
No, those are some good points for the entrance. It's funny you used the hiking boot example. I think the past three or four podcasts people have used hiking boots as their example of affiliate stuff. So it's obviously a popular niche.
It is, and it's so underserved because so many of the ones I look at are just like, okay, we've restated REI 10 times. And I'm like, well, that's useless. Help me. So yeah. And then I also use the Costco free sample analogy for the rest of it where I go like, then tell them a little bit about what you're going to say. So don't just be like, okay, I'm qualified. Jump right into it. You want to be like, here's what you're going to get. Pardon me. So like, I always say, like, if you're going to buy an 800 box of spring rolls, you want to try the spring roll first before you're sure that, like, you're going to want it. So saying, like, okay, I don't know, if it's the best hiking boots, like, Merrill and Columbia did a great job, but this one was, like, the cheapest, but you might need to, like, add some insoles. And then you've given them, the highlight reel almost. And, like, if you think about TV shows and movies, none of us, like, watch a TV show or movies unless we like kind of know what's happening in it. We want to get the preview. So using that preview to be like, okay, here's what you're going to get. Now you can see if it's worth your time.
Okay. Yeah. I like that. I've added a little kind of preview box on some articles. I need to go through an update and do the same thing with more of them. Cause yeah, it's a good idea. Cause if people are skimming down the article, they can at least see, okay, this is why it's number one. Then they can go into more detail if they want to.
Exactly. And I find even for like my affiliates too, having like a highlight box of the top three has done so well, because as much as we write the long post for Google, it feels like users just want us to give them a summary and be very concrete about like, I see so many where it's like, okay, here are the 10 hiking boots. And it's like, everyone is good for a different thing. And I'm like, cool. What's the best one? Which one should I buy? Like, especially if it's a very niche keyword, like hiking boots for high arches, everyone has the same pain point. So like, what is the solution? And I'm very indecisive. So I really want someone else to tell me buy this one.
Yeah.
And if I get to the end of the post and I'm still not sure, I'm going to go to the next person because I want someone who is confident. And on the internet, I think we always diminish a little bit what other people are saying. So like if someone else tells me like, oh, this is like the best hiking boot in the world, I'm like, eh, that's your opinion. But if someone says, maybe this is the best hiking boot, I'm like, wow, you really have no idea because you're like yeah. I already underestimate you a little bit. So if you're underestimating you, we've got a problem.
Yeah, that's a good point. Yeah, sometimes I've had writers that put things like I think or maybe, and then you just kind of like, you just have to get rid of it. It's just got to sound like, you know, exactly what's happening. Even if there is a maybe or it depends, you can, you still got to be like, this is the best one for this. Then you can just talk about, hey, this is the best for this other thing or whatever.
Exactly.
Yeah, yeah. You talked about the zero volume keyword stuff, which is interesting because I think, I wouldn't say people are moving away from it, I guess towards maybe the topical authority kind of idea where, hey, you can't just go spamming all the low competition keywords to try rank anymore. But how are you deciphering from those keywords which should be standalone articles versus what should be part of a larger article?
Yeah, so I actually use them for topical authority, which I think is the important thing, is like when you're writing on travel, there's so many like high authority, like, okay, if you're writing about best things to do in Rome, okay, like the older people who have been there forever have done it. So you need to like write more on the location. And so for me, those zero volume keywords are the ones where I can add that topical authority and be like, okay, I know so much about Rome. I'm not just writing about the best restaurants and best tours or whatever. I'm also telling you about like these kind of uncovered questions that are really, really niche and detailed. And so for me, like, to be honest, most of them could be their own posts. Like you could definitely, especially in the age of AI where you can generate an article in like 5 minutes with Koala or something, you could do one for every single one. You're probably not investing your time the right way though, because at a certain point we do want to get onto like other articles. So the way that I do it is first I look at like what content I already have, because I don't just pick stuff that's easy. If you pick whatever's easy, you will fail. Before I was like good at SEO, what I did is I found like, I think it was like Ultimate Beach Packing List or something as one of the, it was like, I think it was even blue on Key Search, like really, really easy. But when I wrote on it, nothing happened. And it's because I have no beach content on my site, and I didn't back then either. So it was like, okay, why are you doing this? And from that, I learned to be really, really on topic. So what I do basically is I'll be like, okay, what do I have? And then I'll go and do a search to see, okay, how can I, like, what zero volume keywords exist around that topic? And then I try and cluster them. So if there are, I don't know, 10 on what language do they speak in that place, I'll try and find the one that seems to have the most traffic going to it as best we can estimate. Obviously, keyword research tools are terrible at their traffic estimates. And with these zero volume ones, they do try to estimate a number for traffic. It's not perfect. But what I also do is I look at who's ranking. So if the top 10 for all of them is exactly the same, I get to kind of take my pick if they're all also the same search volume. But if one of them seems to actually have a real website on it where the others don't, that one probably is going to be a little bit more authoritative. And while most people would then not do that one, I want that one because I think, I don't know, I'm very competitive. So I want to be like the best of the best. So I'm going to try and find the keyword that like, equally, if they thought it was the best, there's probably a reason. So then I can dive in there and I can basically try and like steal the rug out from under them as best I can. And then by doing that and clustering them, because yeah, a lot of people who do them will just find 20 random ones and go for it. I really try to do topical authority on like the niche aspect, the location, the type of travel. And then I try to create a cluster around the topic too. So if it's all about, I don't know, like horseback riding tips, and like they're all in the same location, I would write a few posts on different types of horseback riding tips around the area. Like maybe it's like best trails, where to buy a saddle. I don't know. I haven't done horseback riding since I was a kid, but like I would go through to try and have that double topical authority where it's like the cluster and the topic.
Gotcha. So within that content strategy then, because you're traveling to so many different countries, and I guess your niche is expat travel. That's still a really, really big niche. I mean, you can just basically cover anything within travel still within that niche.
Yeah.
So then how are you deciding what to cover in each country? Are you sticking to a certain sub niche and then covering the same thing in each country? Like for example, horse riding, but like horse riding in Canada, horse riding New Zealand kind of thing? Or are you just like, whatever you're doing there, you're kind of covering that?
So it depends on the country. I don't go like crazy in depth into every single country so far. I'm like working my way to that. But the first thing I did was I did like a cluster keyword. So it was like a certain kind of formula of a keyword, and then you just sub in the different countries each time. And then I would just write, and it was like, they were very different articles because obviously very different countries, but the idea was the same. So yeah, it'd be like horseback riding in each place sort of a thing. And then from there, I started adding supplementary stuff. So for example, like we always do cost of living posts in living abroad. You have to, because like people need to know what to spend money on. But then there's different ones, like in certain places had variations. So some, it might be like, is it safe? Because people are really concerned about safety in different areas. And as a solo woman, I can speak on that pretty well versus, I don't know, there's a lot of like middle-aged white men trying to tell you what's safe. And it's like, we have a very different perception of what safety is. And we need to recognize that. So like, I would do stuff like that. And what I basically try to do is I start with the keyword cluster, and then I start building out the topic. So if it was New Zealand, I would start with my base living post, and then I would kind of start adding on the supplementary content and try to get, like, most people say 10 posts in a pillar. I try to do 50. So, which is why I don't move on from countries quickly. Like I spend a lot of time on them, and I do that both for, the keyword cluster and for the topic. So it takes me a long time to get through them. I have about 309 posts on my site so far. So as you can tell, I have not gotten super far with all of them. But like, that's kind of the nice thing, is it gives me a lot of room to grow.
Nice. Okay. So that means with different countries, you might still have like completely different topic clusters depending on where. Okay.
Yeah. Like over time. So like I try and do like one at a time. So like Canada has tons because I've just been here for the longest at the moment.
Yeah.
But New Zealand actually is probably my second biggest cluster because of how long I spent there. And at a certain point I do veer off of the travel or the living abroad a little bit into general travel, just because like if someone's living somewhere, they still need to do things like go have fun and go eat and all like the general stuff. So it's nice because you do get to move around a little bit. And I think like with most travel stuff, you have to be so hyper niched at the beginning, and then you get to have a little bit more fun. So I always say it's like when you were a kid, you have like the piggy banks kind of set up. For us, it was just like basically just like random jars or mugs my parents put in our room. And it was like, okay, I'm going to save for a pretty princess dress. I'm going to save for a puppy I'm never going to get because my mom will lie to me and get me a stuffed animal, which I'm still salty about. And then I'm going to save for a trip to Disney. And so when you got your allowance, you would put like a little bit into each one. And the problem is at that point, it takes three times longer to get any benefit. And I'm an impatient person. I want to benefit immediately. So I want to fill up one at a time. And with like blogging and things like that, when you fill up one of them, it overflows into the other ones because then you have topical authority. Google understands that you are like in your overarching niche and authority, and you get more freedom to play. So it is just a lot easier at that point. Like I used to build 15 backlinks a month, and now I'm like, I don't think I've built a backlink in 2 months now. And even then, I think it was just like a fun thing for a friend.
Yeah. So then within the post itself, when you're monetizing with the affiliate stuff, you don't have to share too much detail maybe with the programs and things, but people come to your site to search, I don't know, cost of living in certain places and things to do, whatever it is, say in New Zealand or Canada. What's the intent for the user to buy in terms of monetization? Because, I mean, you could just put a booking.com link in there, hey, buy your flights. But I'm assuming a lot of these people searching, maybe they're not there to go buy a flight after reading your article. Potentially, I don't know. I could be completely wrong. But
no, you're entirely right. And that's what I did wrong initially. Like, and that's kind of why I had to like niche into the locations a bit more as well, is because like expat travel is a really hard thing to monetize because people don't want to buy stuff. They're ready to leave and like get rid of all of their things and move abroad. And like, we don't really have options for like, there's not really visa services for us that we could do that are like legitimate, really helpful visas. There's more like a temporary visa kind of thing. So like an immigration lawyer isn't like, hey, let me give you a commission, Nina. Like they're like, no, I'm fine. I'm an immigration lawyer. Go away. So for us, a lot of it is, actually still like the location, like tours and flights and things like that, that everyone else gets in travel. And that's why I had to start doing more about the locations, because when I was just doing the general, like my main keyword cluster, the problem is it's not very monetizable. Cause even though it gets tons of traffic, it can really only get me ad traffic because those people aren't really ready to pay for things yet. And the things that they're going to pay for, a lot of them I can't be a part of. So, and most of what I tell people is move with as little as possible. So maybe don't buy, like, I don't know, $500 suitcases, that way you have 12 of them. Like, I don't tell people to do that. And that's where you get kind of stuck. So I do find that like language services are really good. So when you're talking about like, rather than cost of living, it's more about like how to meet people, how to get around when you first get there, things like that. You can build affiliates into all of those. And I do build affiliates, like I have affiliate links in every single post on my site. But the ones that like really convert for affiliates are the ones that are like a dedicated post selling something. And those are the buyer intent keywords. So the person expects to buy something. And because of that, they've got like their credit card out, they're ready. It's like, yeah, okay, Nina, take my money. Let's do it. We're good to go. And then for people like a year ago, I felt really bad. I was like, okay, well, I make no money. So like, I don't want to spend any money. Why would I tell other people to? But then I realized like, if they're ready, there's no guilt. And like, they want to spend money. So for example, like, yeah, there's like trustedhousesitters.com where like for $140 a year, you get to basically apply to stay at people's houses all over the world for free and just watch their dog. And I am such a dog lover. So I did that for a while. Now I have my own dog and like, he's giant. So it's quite challenging to take him with others. But like, I did that and a lot of people didn't know about it. So I wrote an email about it and then it did really, really well. And I was like, oh, people just don't know it's out there. And $140 a year for many people is not an issue. It's just that it was an issue for me back when I started traveling and I had like $2,000 saved and was like, let's try and make this last for a year in Europe. So you have to remember that like your customer avatar also isn't you. It's a you with money typically. And then that helps get rid of some of the guilt. But yeah, for me, it's like, I'll include them in posts where it makes sense. So if I'm talking about like, oh, it's hard to meet people if you don't know the language, I'll embed some sort of language affiliate. And there's so many. I'm right now in the middle of a trial of a couple of them to see like which converts better. But initially I just went with Rosetta Stone because like everyone knows Rosetta Stone and like it's out there. So then you just have to kind of play around with it. And a lot of it is like once you figure out which articles on your site convert, write a million of those, like write so many more of just that. Like since last summer, I've basically just been writing affiliate posts because like for the first 5 years, I didn't write a single one. So I was like, I've got some making up to do before we end up having way too much of them. And then, yeah, I just figured out which keyword kind of structures worked for me, found a bunch, wrote on them to death. Like I definitely am one of those people that like, money doesn't make me bored. So where everyone else is like, oh, like I'm going to get tired writing about Canada after 10 posts. I'm like, when I see my bank account, I'm pretty okay that I don't love this post. Like that's all right by me.
Nice. Would an example, for example, like a buyer intent article, something like best retreats in New Zealand or something, and then that would have like 10 of the ones you went to.
Exactly. That's okay. Exactly it. But I actually, one thing that I do, and this is a great tip for anybody, write on the lower volume ones. Everyone writes on the ones that are like 1,000 page views a month because they want the page views and they want the money and they think they're going to get more money from that. But like my highest income posts get like, I don't know, I think one of them gets 30, but most of them get like 10 people a month. But like I make thousands off of them because it's the right tour. So like typically as well, the more expensive thing, less people are searching for because less of us are that bougie. So like a private driver around Morocco or something. When I was in Morocco, I'm like, I'm walking everywhere. I cannot afford anything. But like, I don't know, if my dad had gone to Morocco, he'd be like, okay, someone drive me because like, I just don't want to walk down these extra streets. And so because of that, like there's fewer of him maybe that are ready to do that. But the ones who are ready to spend the money on it. And we don't really have to convince them as much. Like they're prepared. And same for like bucket list experiences. Like in New Zealand, when I went swimming with like wild dolphins, that's not a cheap experience. And like a lot of them are closed now, which is like probably for the best. I don't know that it was like that ethical. The one I did was pretty good, but like there were a lot of bad ones. But because of that, it's like, okay, I like called my grandma and I was like, could I have an advance on my birthday money so I could do this? Cause like, I really want to do this. And most people, yeah, they don't just have that money ready, but if they're in the mindset of like, I'm going to do this, they're going to do it. And so you're just helping facilitate that.
Mm. Have you looked into higher ticket travel stuff, like private jet rentals and things like that?
So I have, because I have a dog, and so to travel with dogs, you typically have to rent a private jet when they're over, like, he's 75 pounds now, probably closer to 80 because he's been gorging a little bit recently. But he's huge, and so what you do typically is you share a private jet with a bunch of other people. So yes, I have been, and looking into it a lot. I definitely think that, like, it would work quite well. The issue is fitting it into my current content. And so that's when you have to devise ways to, like, just adjust a little corner of it and then make room for it. Like, I found cruises are crazy. If you like cruises, start a cruise website. Cause, like, those things, one booking will pay you like $3,000 in commission. Oof, and
I've seen some people killing. Yeah.
And like, I've been on one cruise as a kid. I think I barely remember it. I think I've repressed most of my childhood at this point. So like, I would love to be a cruise person. I'm not. So like, that's not a niche for me. But it's a great niche. And like, when you can find those expensive things that fit, go for it. Like, do it for sure. If you could find like any sort of, even outside of travel, any expensive hobby is so worth it. Like, I'm unfortunate that most of my hobbies are really, really cheap. So I have like, I don't know. I need to find some expensive hobbies for the next couple sites for sure.
Yeah, the private jet one's a good hobby, but yeah. a thought experiment. How would you add private jet content to your site? Would it be a completely, maybe a different cluster of keywords or silo that would just be like private jet travel, or would it be luxury or high end travel or something like that?
I think there's a couple ways to do it. So it depends on like how many keywords I could find. And for me, I'm really driven by keyword research. Then I adjust the marketing based on what I see. Like, I like to see the data first and then adjust. Like, I will never dive into something where someone else isn't already doing it. That way I can see that it actually is viable. And so with that one, there's a couple ways. Like, the first way is like, when you're moving stuff, to be honest, it's probably cheaper than some of the moving companies you get. Like, if you can like load up your full family and a ton of your stuff and your dog onto that plane, that is far cheaper than shipping. So like, it could be ways to move abroad, different ways to fly your stuff abroad. Do you need to ship your things? Like, there could just be keywords not fully around private jets to just kind of like test the waters, get people ready. Then it could be stuff about like how much it costs to move abroad. So like the actual transport cost, put it in an article there. But then yes, I would try and like find specific private jet keywords, probably more related to the country. So more about like, okay, renting a private jet in Canada or something. I don't even know if renting is the right word. I don't know what word you would use. But like, if someone wants to leave Canada and go somewhere else, that's probably what they're going to search, is like how to find them here. Or maybe private jet Canada to New Zealand. Like, how would that work? And once I found all of those, I would try and figure out how I can connect them to my existing content. So if your existing content is like living in New Zealand, then how do they get there? And there's pretty easy ways to like make those connections. Like, I always want to think about what the psychology of my avatar is. Like, okay, I have like a 3-page document of like who I'm writing for. And like, I have it down to like what university she went to, like everything. I got really, really detailed. And because of that, I'd be like, okay, is this person going to get on this private jet? And if not, how can I like make it feasible that they would? Maybe you have like a kind of subsect avatar, like, okay, one of the, like, there's like the super cheap version of that girl, and then there's the expensive version of that girl. That's allowed too. And then you just have to make sure that you're like choosing the right tone for each one as well, because if you write the same way for two different people, it's not going to work. Like, I always say, like, if you're writing about like nightlife experiences in Rome, if it's for someone with kids and for someone on a gap year, very different tone. And then for a retiree, nightlife might mean 6 p.m. I don't know. So like, it completely changes it. And you just have to be really aware of who you're writing to. So for me, it would have to kind of be a combined effort of like keywords, looking at my content, looking at my avatar. And I would do so much research on pain points of people that like are on the private jets to see like, and I think cost would be the biggest one, but like, you never know. It could be more of the sustainability aspect. Right now, everyone's like mad at Taylor Swift for her private jet. So like, I'm sure there is a sustainability element I could try and figure out. And you just want to be sure that you are like prepared for everything they're going to throw at you.
How did you do the research for your avatar document? Did you just look on forums and things like that, or do you have insight yourself?
Yeah, it was a little bit of everything. So I joined, like, long before I joined every Facebook group that exists for my niche. Like, and I'm a Facebook girl. Like, Facebook is, like, my favorite spot. As much as, like, everyone else is like, it's dead, I'm like, well, I'm everywhere on Facebook. If you think I'm on Twitter, I am everywhere on Facebook. I think I run, like, 5 Facebook groups now. And so in there, it's like, okay, I would go in and just, I would just every day be confronted by different people and their problems and what they were struggling with. And then I just also thought about, like, I think a lot of travel for us, like for the travel bloggers, we think of our past selves a little bit. Like, it was kind of, I mean, I moved abroad for the first time when I was 16 and was just like, bye family, I'm going to Italy, and just like went by myself, which was, I don't think you'd be allowed to do that now, but it was great. And so, like, definitely I'm not talking to 16-year-olds because I had no buying power back then, but I'm talking to maybe an older version that is still in that mentality of, like, that person who just wanted to get out of her home because it just didn't make sense to her, like, life there, and she wanted to experience more. And then from there, I just adapted it based on, like, okay, what income level are people kind of at that do this? And did some surveys, did some research. You can look in your Google Analytics. I mean, now that we're moving to G4, it'll be a little bit less helpful. But with, like, our original analytics, you could go in and see, where are they? Where, like, what are their other interests and things like that? And then build around existing stuff to some extent. I also just, like, emailed my people a lot. And I was like, hey, who are you? And, like, what, like, why are you here? And from that, like, I have a really good email community because I just treat them all like my friends. So I'm like, okay, what's happening today? What are your summer plans? That's so cool. And I really, like, I respond to every single email, which is probably why I get a bit burnt out sometimes. But it really helped me understand. And so, like, my first iteration of this avatar was probably half a page, which is still pretty long, but I did a publishing media degree in, like, Oxford. I did my master's there. And with that, we learned about, like, the marketing avatar. So I had, I guess, like, a baseline of things to include. Like, I knew that you should include their education, where they live, probably give them a salary. So, you know, like, okay, if she's making $5,000 a year, I'm not pitching her private jets. Like, that's just not going to work out. But if she's making, like, $500,000 a year, she's probably open to it. Like, she's probably, like, it might not be an everyday purchase, but it's available. yeah, so it was a lot of that. It was also just adjusting as I went and then seeing, like, the type of language people responded to, seeing what people's main issues were. So, like, I didn't realize people would be so afraid of telling their family they want to move abroad. And for me, like, I just do things and my family disapproves massively, but I'm like, okay, bye. it, like, starting a travel blog, my dad still says travel blog like it's a dirty word. Like, he's like, what are you doing? And every couple of days he's like, so, you know, like, you could write the LSATs again and go to law school. And I'm like, I am good, go away. So, like, I just never bothered with that. But I realized for a lot of other people, that is going to be, like, the biggest pain point, is their family won't support them, so they're not going to go. And so I had to add that into the avatar to be like, okay, this is a fear of hers that just, for me, didn't occur to me initially. And you have to be, like, open to hearing that and adjusting to it. And, like, I think that's a good thing for me, is I'm always willing to say, like, okay, how can we pivot? And, like, even in, like, my SEO business, I have failed drastically with things where I'm like, oh, this messaging makes so much sense. And everyone's like, what are you talking about? And I'm like, oh, whoops, my brain is clearly on its own track today. So I think just being open to hearing it too, as you grow, and then adjusting, and your ideal avatar might change as you go. You might realize that you started off for, yeah, like a solo female traveler, and you realize in the end that person got married somehow along the way, and now you've got to figure it out and adjust.
Nice, nice. So what's your plans to scale that site to more page views and more revenue going ahead?
Yeah, that's actually something I've been, like, thinking about and trying to, like, plot out a little bit more lately. Because for a while there, it was just, like, hit certain numbers of posts, which, like, I don't know why everyone's so obsessed with the number of posts, because realistically, like, it indicates almost nothing. Like, I had 200 posts and 5,000 page views before I, like, redid everything. So for me, the biggest thing right now is continuing my keyword research and finding more of those content clusters. And I have a lot of affiliate posts to finish off that are kind of in this current iteration. And then after that, it is going to be probably pivoting to another country and getting away from Canada, which, like, I think I need to do anyway physically. So once I, like, get out of Canada again, it'll be quite nice to pivot there. And then I have a couple digital products that I do sell. They were doing really well for a bit, and then I just stopped promoting them because I was like, I don't know if I care enough in my email list. And so they're doing okay from, like, on page. I think I forgot to mention that earlier with the income strategies. Mm. And, like, they're $2 $7 courses, so, like, they are not... I think the most they've ever gotten is like 10% of my income. And that was like with a lot of email promo, but they do decently well, and probably trying to consider if there are other opportunities for digital products to throw in there. I have no eBooks. I have one freebie opt-in that I use and that's it. So pivoting those a bit. And then, yeah, so I think like the content creation will keep happening. I don't plan. I know everyone's always like, go to YouTube, go to like, I don't have social media for that, like that site at all. So like, it just, that doesn't matter to me. I'm like, no, I'm not going to pivot there. I tried a week of Pinterest and forgot how much I hated it. So I was like, I'm not doing that again. So I think for me, it'll be doing I have to finish up a content audit. Cause like the EEAT audit I did, I'm 50 to 70% done. I have to double check. So finishing that and then just keep going with what's been working. I don't think you need to pivot until things like fully show you they're not working, like especially with everyone's panicking about AI and like the SGE or whatever with Google. And I'm like, you know what, until I know something's happening, I've got enough anxiety. Like I stand in the cheese aisle at the grocery store and just have existential dread, so like I don't need to panic about this too. That's just, it's too much for me to handle. Yeah.
Are you using any AI tools in your workflow?
I've been using an AI writer since 2021, back when everyone told me, it's the end of the world, and like, you're so dumb for using it. And I was like, okay, sure. And then got into Mediavine in 6 months from it. So I was like, I think you guys are maybe wrong. But back then it was like more people did the whole one-click generation. Google did say, we don't like it. And yet they kept ranking me number one with a bunch of AI articles. So I was like, maybe just Google doesn't like a certain type of AI, because I've always been the person that spends like twice as much time researching and then goes into the writing. So yeah, it just worked for me. So I've used Jasper, I've used Koala, I'm trying Surfer. I just bought it yesterday, so giving it a try. We'll see how it goes. But I have used, my accountant hates me, I'm at like 79 different AI tools now that I've paid for to try in the last year. Gosh. And he is like, sometimes he'll call me and he's like, are you okay? And I'm like, no, but that's okay. It's fine. Technically, this actually matters for my business. So yeah, most of them are like writers. And then there's also been a lot that are for just like other interesting things that feel fun for a minute, like converting YouTube videos to shorts or, which like, cause I have YouTube, but only for my SEO site, not for my travel sites. Cause again, everything would be completely crooked. My dog would body slam me halfway through. So the camera would just fall at one point. So I love AI. And I think as long as you're using it and like changing things a bit, and also like making sure that you add yourself to it. No AI could talk about me falling off a cliff unless I prompted it to, and the right prompts, like you won't have to edit if you use a lot of good prompts. That being said, I love editing. Like I've been a freelance writer since I was 16, so I'm quite happy to write and happy to edit.
So you have a writing team as well then? Yeah. And do they use AI?
No. So right now I hired a bunch of like complete beginners, cause I was like, let's train people. Because like I do sell SEO courses and I was like, realistically, not everyone can afford them. So let's kind of do a mentorship program where we train these people from like ground zero to Nina level, where it's like, I used to get paid like $200 per thousand word to freelance write, obviously not for bloggers, cause like bloggers are not going to pay you that. But what I did is like, I hired them. We did like the test article just to make sure that like, I don't know, they've written something in their life before, because anyone can submit whatever. And then from there, we've grown. Every month there's like a training. We do like a live call every now and then. My editors help me like manage outlines and editing. And we've been slowly growing from there. So I have, it's really funny. Every time I send a training, I scare a couple people off that are like, this is, now it's just gotten too hard. And I'm like, yeah, but it kind of needs to be hard. Otherwise, everyone would be successful. Like, I actually had like a client recently, I sent them their blog audit and they were like, oh my God, there's so much I need to do. It's a lot of work. And I was like, yeah, because this is work. That's how this works. So yeah, so right now I have them working more on my other sites, because there's a couple that I want to try this whole blog selling thing, and then I keep forgetting I have the sites to work on. So I have one that has like 4 posts on it in the last year, and I'm like, okay, we need to fix that. That's a problem. So yeah, it's been a fun time. I've learned I don't like having a team. I'm not good at it. Like, managing is not a strong suit of mine. The people are great. It's not their fault. It's just that, like, I am a flighty person. I am the kind of person where I want to wake up and decide on my day in that moment. And when you have to pre-plan, like, everyone's content calendar for the month, and you have to check in, and you have to, like, there's just a lot of things that, like, I never saw myself doing, and I've had to adjust to it. And it is an interesting challenge, but, like, everyone always says the be-all and end-all is having this massive team. And I'm like, I kind of would have just as much fun with 5 of us and, like, not having to check in every day. So, yeah.
That's such a good idea, though, to have your own training. Train the riders and then just have them on board like that.
Well, I hired, like, 3 or 4 last year that, like, were from a couple courses I had done, or were, like, I always make the mistake of, like, I'm a very friendly person, but, and I just assume everyone, like, has the best intentions, and they don't always, and, like, and not, sometimes not even, like, malicious intentions. They're just, like, not as good as I'd hoped. So I hired a bunch of people, that some of them were just friends that I was like, okay, let's, like, help you out with some money. And then realized, I was like, okay, the problem is, if people come to you pre-trained, they often think they're the be-all and end-all. And I'm like, and you might be at your level, and your version of perfect is different than my version. And that's okay that it's different, but if I'm paying you and offering you training, you have to adjust. Otherwise, like, we're not going to work together. And yeah, like, I had one writer tell me that secondary keywords weren't in, like, her scope of work. And I was like, well, then don't be an SEO writer. Like, that's not how this works. So, like, and I did the research for them. So I'm like, you're not finding them. Like, you're just writing it. So yeah, I think training people, it's really hard. It takes a lot of time. I thought it would be a one and done situation very naively, which, like, is wrong, because, like, no one has ever trained me one and done. But I was like, okay, I'll record, like, I don't know, a week's worth of training and give checklists. And, like, and I'm very, I try to be very open to people's different learning styles. So, like, when I hire people, my first question is, like, how do you learn best? And it's something I wish people had asked me in job interviews, because, like, some people learn from video, some people learn from text, some people learn from checklists. Some people want to be micromanaged, and I'll never understand that. I'll never get that, which is why I have my editor do it. But, like, yeah, then I'm able to adjust to their needs. But the problem is, like, you can say things one way, and not everyone's going to get it. So, like, I told them to cite your sources, and I meant to give external links, but I just used that term once when I was explaining it, and then everyone kept giving me academic citations, and I was like, what is happening? And I had to ask one. I'm like, why did you do that? Like, I know that you know better. And she was like, oh, but you told us to. And I was like, oh, sorry, like, my bad. Because I just use turns of phrase sometimes, and I forget that, like, people take me very literally, but I'm a very metaphoric person.
So how many other sites are in your portfolio then? You mentioned you had a couple of others. Are they all travel related?
No, so I have 5 now. I'd say, like, 2 are fully travel. One is, like, kind of connected to travel. It's more to do with my dog, because, like, I just need to write off some of the stuff for this dog. He is expensive. he's a golden retriever, so they're allergic to everything. So, like, his food is $1 million. So I have him as kind of a site now, and all the colors are based off of, like, his coloring and his leash, which is fun. I started a recipe site, which is a challenge. That's the one that has 4 posts on it. Cause I used to bartend and cook a lot more. So I'm like, I've got this. And I was like, oh, this takes a lot of time. Like, now I get it. So that's the one I have to kind of work on more. And then I have my SEO site. And then I have, like, probably a 3-page Word document of sites I might want to do. And I keep unloading them on people. So, like, my old roommate, I built him a decking website, because I was like, yeah, here, like, I found this great, like, cluster of keywords, make a decking website. And he was like, what? So, and then, like, my sister's an architect, so I keep sending her, like, I'm like, we'll do this for, like, a blog. And she's like, go away, I'm building houses. So, yeah, it's fun, because I get to kind of dabble in a bunch, but I'm trying really hard to focus on a couple things and not let shiny object syndrome get in my way. Cause honestly,
that's impossible.
It's true. But I really regret I started my 3rd site last year in June, and I had, like, just gotten into Mediavine, and I was like, why did I do this? Like, I didn't look at it until February of this year. And I was like, that's like, I don't know. The idea will still be there. Even if the domain name isn't, there'll be another domain name. So like, wait till you get the first one to a good spot and don't like panic start a bunch of sites like I did. Cause like my second site I started, cause like my first one was at that point, not doing well. It was before I started the SEO stuff. And I was like, oh, well, it's this site's fault. It's not my fault. I'm perfect. No, it was my fault.
So there might be some people listening to this inspired by how much you're making with these sites and what you're doing. What would be your advice for someone who's looking to start a new site, how they should go about it?
Yeah, definitely please like pay for a domain name. Don't start with like a free, like I see a lot of people like, oh, well, I'll just start this way. Also use a WordPress site. Do not use Squarespace. Do not use Wix. I know they're getting better, but there's so many limitations. I've moved so many clients off of Squarespace and immediately they see a 30% growth. So like, even though it takes a minute to adjust to WordPress, make the adjustment. And that's the biggest thing in my opinion is like, things are going to take time. Let them take time. So don't rush your first 100 posts out in 100 days. You're not going to have learned enough in between each post. You're not going to be looking at the data. You're not going to be engaging with your audience. You're just going to be panicking and like trying to get out 100 posts that probably aren't good. So like, let things take time. Like now I can research, write, and publish an article in 2 hours, but I'm 6 years in now, so it's been a long time, and I definitely didn't start doing that. And so same for people that are like, oh, but it takes me 10 hours to just like find a keyword. That's okay. It should take you that long at the beginning when you're trying to understand it. It will get so much easier as you go. And then also be prepared for like no money for a really long time. I talk about my income now. There were 5 years where like for four of them, I made a grand total, not even like paid out, grand total, $64 on Google AdSense. And I still can't get it because you have to hit $100 before you can get it. So it's just locked away there taunting me like, hey, you failed so bad, you can't even have money. And I'm like, okay, fine, cool. And then from there, yeah, pick something you're passionate about and try writing on it first. So I started like this recipe site, having never written a recipe in my life. And I was like, okay, I've got this. Just try it. Write a couple samples first to see, like, do I actually care enough about this to write about it? And it's okay if writing is, like, not your thing. There are other things you can do on other platforms that aren't writing. If you don't like writing, that's allowed. And yeah, and I also always say, do it yourself first before you automate it. So before you hire a writer, know what good writing is. I got scammed by a Pinterest VA years ago who redirected all my pins to link to her account rather than mine. And I didn't know how to check that because I'd never used Pinterest. So I was like, okay, she says it takes 2 years to see growth. We'll keep going for 5-6 months and be out like 7K and trust her. Cause I was like, cool, you know, Pinterest. And if you don't know things to test, to trial, to analyze, you will have problems. So same with like using an AI writer, write yourself first. So you know what good writing is. Then use the AI writer to be like, okay, now that I know what I want, this is what we're going for. And then, yeah, and then a lot of it is just really hard work with no reward for a while. It sucks. So that's why I say do something you're passionate about, because not even just something you've done. Other people are like, oh, start a site on everything you've ever done in your life. Your first one should be something you really care about. And ideally, do try to find something you care about that's not crazy competitive. But I've seen websites about garden hoses that do well. So I mean, realistically, it seems like any niche is a possible niche.
That garden hose website sounds horrible.
It's like, yeah, it was like just reviews of different garden hoses. And I was like, who researches their, like, I went to Canadian Tire and picked up the first one I saw. Like I didn't know there were different types.
I feel you. So if anyone wants to find you, Nina, follow you, see what you're up to, where can they do that?
So I have my website, sheknowsseo.co. I'm also on Instagram at Nina Clapperton, and I'm on Twitter at Nina Clapperton. And I have a free Facebook group, SEO for Travel Bloggers. But we let in every blogger, to be honest. I niched it down a bit too much at the beginning. And I send an email newsletter every Tuesday with travel and general blogging tips. Whenever it's a travel-specific tip, I always like say how to do other blogging stuff. And like just our most recent one, I shared a tip on how to find affiliate keywords. So yeah.
Yeah, perfect. I actually read that one this morning before this. So we'll chuck those links in the description too, so everyone can find them easily. But thanks for coming on, Nini. I appreciate it.
Thanks so much for having me.